Welcome back to the Jasmine Star Show, a place where y'all know we talk about life, business, and everything on the in-between. Today, I couldn't be more excited to have a LinkedIn expert and podcast professional queen that she is. Now, Hala and I have had conversations both in the podcasting space and then separately on LinkedIn, and I couldn't be more excited to see how much her career has grown. She is CEO of YAP Media. Y'all, we are going to be breaking down the best and the newest of what the top podcasters, what celebrities are doing in this space, how she's been able to create synergy and create a business around being a true professional and amazing at what she does. Hala, welcome to the Jasmine Star Show.
I'm so excited to be here, Jasmine. Thank you for having me.
Okay. So this has been a long time coming. Our paths intersected a few years ago. And for people who've been on the podcast and been around the block, y'all know that the people I bring on the show are people I know have cultivated a relationship with and people who I know are here to be in a place of service. Like every objective for the podcast has been like, what is the one action item you could do or take away? And so one of the things we want to start off with, let's start, hit the ground running. Sure. I know we're going to talk about an origin story, but let's start driving out some value. So one of the things I found the most inspiring about your story is that before you hired a team, you started with unpaid interns. Now, I kind of just want to tap a little bit there because the thing that I see a lot of times that's stopping people from taking action is not having enough support or thinking that it has to look a certain way. And one of the things that I wanted to unwrap with you is like, if you are setting out to hit a goal and you're ready to take action and you need help, Hala, do you have insight on how people might do that?
Totally. So I love this part of my story because it just goes to show the organic growth that we had. So basically, I had a lot of super fans that would reach out to me after they listened to the show when I first started. And they would reach out to me on LinkedIn because that's where I first started. And they'd be like, Hala.
Oh, hold on. Let's pause here. Can you go back and give a little bit description? You're like, okay, that's where it first started. But like fill in that gap.
Yeah, 100%. So in terms of the people reaching out to me and wanting to work for me, they actually reached out to me first. It wasn't me asking them. They were inspired by how passionate I was and the fact that I was doing everything for free as a side hustle, part-time job. And I would talk about that on my podcast, how like, you know, I'm just doing this of service. I'm not trying to make money. I just want to help people. And I would go on LinkedIn and I would put my podcast stuff on LinkedIn. And then I became one of the top podcasters on LinkedIn. And then I started to get super fans and they would tell me how much I improved their lives, how much they like appreciated all the hard work I was doing. And they would be like, I just want to help you make this bigger. I want to make sure that you're one of the top podcasters in the world. How can I help you? What can I do? So what I would say is, why don't you come on my team and I'll show you how to do everything that I do. So I would teach like one guy how to do my website because I was a marketer, right? I've been a marketer since I was 17 years old. Even before I worked a corporate job, I was, you know, interning at a radio station. I had a really popular blog site when I was just like 20 years old, right? So I've been in this world for like a really long time. So I knew how to do websites, videos, graphics, copywriting, social media, all these different things. And I'd say like, hey, just come work for me for free. I'll teach you in return. I'll teach you how to do all these skills. Stay as long as you want. When you feel like you're not learning, move on. Or, you know, maybe, you know, down the line, there's an opportunity where I can hire you. But for 2 years, it was just a volunteer group. And like I said, it happened super organically where people were asking me and I just had the idea like, all right, let me pop everybody in a Slack channel and basically just like start a team.
Oh, interesting.
And so I put everybody in a Slack channel and then I started, you know, having like monthly calls with them, weekly calls with them. And then slowly by slowly, we turned into Yap Media.
Interesting. Okay. That's fascinating. Now, I had listened to a podcast that you were on and you were talking about creating posts that align with LinkedIn's editorial agenda. So can you kind of bridge the gap between you're building out this intern team that's turning into an official business, not knowing it at the time? Can you explain what that editorial agenda means? And then how do people take advantage of it? Were you putting interns on it at the beginning? Talk to me about that.
Totally. So the editorial agenda really has to do with LinkedIn's algorithm. So LinkedIn's algorithm is four steps. Okay. So I can go through the four steps if you'd like, but the last step is what makes LinkedIn unique. Essentially, they're monitoring all the top posts of the day and they have human editors, not AI, not machines, human editors that are scanning through all the top posts of the day. And essentially, they're trying to control LinkedIn's editorial agenda so that LinkedIn stays branded as this professional website for professionals, for entrepreneurs, for hiring, for recruitment, because LinkedIn has a goal, you know, competing with Indeed and ZipRecruiter for hiring and recruitment. And they also have a goal of keeping users online for as long as possible so they can sell ads. So those are their two goals. And so if you want to be popular on LinkedIn, you've got to align to those two goals. You've got to keep people for as long as possible on the platform, and you've got to align to LinkedIn's editorial agenda, which means that you've got to align to your topic plus careers, your topic, you know, and the intersection of recruitment, hiring, and so on. So that's what I mean by aligning to LinkedIn's editorial agenda. It's how you play nicely with LinkedIn's algorithm. So to your point, eventually, once I started having a team, like the origin story was that fans were asking me to join the team. And at first I didn't know what to do with that. But then eventually I was like, okay, you can learn under me. And, you know, before that, I was doing a lot of volunteer work. I was president of my alumni association. I was president of the Young Employee Network at Hewlett Packard. I had this blog site with 150 female bloggers who worked for free for me too in the blog, in and out for like 3 years, right? So I've had all these experiences of like recruiting interns. So for me, it was like really natural. I was like, yeah, just come learn with me. Like, this is what everybody does, right? Like, so that's how that team started. And then I started to formalize it. Once I had my interns, I started doing like summer internships and started promoting that on LinkedIn. And then I like winter internships, and I would put out videos. And because internships is a hot topic on LinkedIn, because it aligns with their editorial agenda, that's, you know, probably why it picked up steam, because it aligned with their editorial agenda, like you were saying.
Okay. So it's been cool because the way that you frame up the story is a little bit origin story and a lot value driven, which has been pretty fantastic. So you start off with interns, it becomes a little bit more formalized. You're strategically aligning your objectives with the editorial agenda on LinkedIn. And then at what point do you say, okay, I now have a business?
Yeah. So really it was me paying attention to what my audience was telling me, number one. And number two, it was me finding myself with more time. So the first reason why is because people like you would come on the show, and after they would come on my podcast, they were all celebrities, entrepreneurs, and so on. I had a pretty big podcast from the start in terms of notoriety, right? Not in terms of downloads. And so I had these guests that would at the end of the show be like, Hala, who does your LinkedIn? How did you grow so fast? How did you grow so big? Hala, who does your podcast? Could you do this for me? And I'd always say like, no, I'm so sorry. I've got this intern team. I had a really cushy job at Disney. And I was like, this is just like for fun. I just do this of service. I can't help you. And I really pushed people back for almost a year. And then COVID hit. And it was 2020, March of 2020. Actually, my dad got really sick. He ended up passing away. And I found myself in my parents' house while my dad was in the hospital, having so much free time because work was shut down. I was stuck at my parents' house. I couldn't see my friends. I couldn't see my boyfriend because I had gotten COVID. And at that time, March 2020, it was like I had, you know, the plague, right? Like nobody wanted to be around me. And so for like 2 months, I found myself with all this time. And Heather Monahan, who's still my client, she was my first client. She came on my show. She asked me and I said, you know, I can't help you. And she kept messaging me on LinkedIn. Hala, your videos are awesome. You have to show me how to do your videos. And I wanted Heather as a mentor because I looked up to her. She was like who I wanted to be in 10 years. And I was like, I can't do it for you, but I'll teach you how to do it. And so I started scheduling these meetings for her on Saturdays. And we did like 2 meetings. The second meeting, I was showing her like my Slack channel, my Drive, my templates. And she's like, Hala, I just had a call with VaynerMedia and I can give them my money. They're great, but your stuff is better. You have a social agency. You just don't know it. You hate your job. You told me like, quit your job. I'll be your first client. You can't say no. And I was like, okay, I guess I'll try. And so I took her as my first client.
Now, what month is this?
So now it is like June of 2020.
Okay.
I took her as my first client. And by July, I had a second client who was a billionaire and it was a $30,000 monthly retainer.
Did you charge Heather?
Like $700 a month, like nothing. And then
okay, wait. Hala. I know that this is your story and you have said this story so many times, but I'm like, can we just pause for the gravity of what happened? Because in a 3 month time period, while you're going through uncertainty in the world, the landscape of the world in March 2020 looked crazy, for a lack of better words. You're dealing with the potential loss of your father.
Yep.
And you're at Disney, but Disney closes down and you have extra time. And within 3 months, somebody decides to pay you $700.
$700 a month to start like working on her. Like, it was first videos. Then I took over her LinkedIn and did that and got the processes for that. And then I started taking over her podcast within like 1 month. And she still wasn't paying me a lot because she was like my beta, right?
Got it.
And so, but then I had a billionaire who came on my podcast. His name was Jason Waller. And he, at the end of the show, was like, "Hey, do you do social and production?" And now I could say yes. So I was like, "Yeah, sure, I do. I do." And I had no website. I had no logo. Me and my first intern, Timothy Tan, put together a PowerPoint. And I remember I presented the PowerPoint to Tim, and I had LinkedIn services for $3,000, podcast production for $3,000. And then there was like, I think Instagram for $3,000. And he's like, "Why don't we just make it $10,000 each? He's a billionaire." And I was like, "Yeah, you're right. Maybe I should do $10,000 each, you know?" And so I did it. I presented to him. I have really good presentation skills. They used to call me the PowerPoint princess before they called me the podcast princess in the corporate world. So I made like an awesome PowerPoint. And at the end of it, he's like, "Let's do it." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And then all of a sudden I was making, you know, $30,000 a month for a brand new agency. I was able to start hiring some people and putting people on payroll. And then I got Kara Golden of Hint Water. I took over her social, Hint Water social.
Okay. Yeah. So let me go back and like ask a couple clarifying questions. When you land a $30,000 a month client and you're still working with a $700 a month client, does anything change?
No. And by the way, I was still working at Disney. It took me 6 months to quit Disney, and I was making almost $200,000 a month in my agency, and I had 30 employees around the world. And then I quit Disney because I was very scared to quit my job.
Got it. So your third client, what are you charging her?
It was like, just like Jason Waller. I was a white glove agency, you know, and everybody wanted to work with me, and we were really good, right? I created a really awesome team. So then I was a white glove agency, and Heather would help me get clients and refer me. And I kept, you know, I always gave, Heather still has the homie discount. It's not $700.
You know what? There's no tea, no shade. I'm so happy. She found somebody, took a risk, just desserts for somebody like seeing like, you know, a diamond in the rough. Okay.
Yeah.
So I would pull back, and there's somebody who's listening, and what they're thinking or what they're saying is, "That must be nice. That sounds like it was easier for her." And if you were only looking at March of 2020 to, let's say, December 2020, somebody in that siloed amount of time might be able to say it was easy for her. Maybe. But
yeah,
what
right.
I want to point out was, from that time in March 2020, how long had you been creating content on LinkedIn prior to that for free, giving back, building your brand? How long before that?
2 years. But before that, I had a blog for 3 years. And before that, I had online radio shows and shit for another 3 years. So this was like 10 years in the making. And by the way, I worked nonstop for 4 years straight. Every weekend, every Saturday, every Sunday, I had a side hustle podcast. I had a side hustle agency and a really like executive corporate job where I was running a whole email marketing team at Disney. And I was doing all those things at once. And actually, I would wake up super early in the morning and I wouldn't go to bed until like 1 a.m. And I would just like work consistently through. And I was lucky because I was with a boyfriend at the time that also was super obsessed with his career. So we would just like work side by side together and just, you know, grind it out. So I was hustling really hard, and I actually lost like a lot of friends, and like people thought I was crazy. And then finally it paid off, you know, like it really took off after like 2.5 years. And then you've even seen me, like, it's been a slow growth and a lot of hard work.
So I really wanted to, what I like to do is like, I like to point out possible thought patterns that people might have and then just clarify it from the beginning. Now, one of the things that I have seen, and I can't speak to this to you with certainty, which is why I want to bring it up if you're cool talking about it, is for so long, you and I were cut from a similar cloth, right? Like, we're going to figure it out. We're going to work. We're going to do everything we can to figure out a way. Did you ever experience that work becoming integrated with your identity? Like, what was happening during this time of like something to prove, at least not for you, I can't say yet, but for me, felt like I had something to prove. I felt like I had a chip on my shoulder. I felt like I just needed to get it done. And then it wasn't until I took a big step back and like brought myself down that I'm like, oh, I'm mixing my identity with my professional career. Did you ever experience that?
Yeah. You know, I've had a lot of pivoting in my career. I first started my career as in radio. I actually dropped out of college when I was 19 years old to work for Angie Martinez, who is the voice of New York. She's like a huge radio personality at Hot 97, which at the time, 10 years ago, was like a big deal to work at Hot 97.
Well, how did you get connected with Angie?
I just worked my way up. I was an intern in the program department and I was the rock star intern. And then I ended up quitting my job because she asked me, she's like, can you come work for me every day? And I was like, okay. And, you know, that was a crazy thing for me to have done at 19 years old, quit college. And all my siblings were in med school. So I was like totally the black sheep of my family and like basically got like, you know, kicked out for a while. But I did it because I was really passionate about it. And at the time, I was singing. I've always wanted to use my voice to make a positive change in the world. And I took this internship originally at Hot 97 because I was trying to push my music. I was songwriting, singing. And then I got to Hot 97 and I realized like, oh, you know, I really like being an online personality. They let me do commercials. I would do like online radio shows with the up and coming DJs on the side. And I was like, okay, like I'll just be the next Angie Martinez. They're priming me for that anyway. So I worked there for free, zero money for 3 years, zero money. I made my money at night selling showcase tickets and like and hosting underground hip hop contests, basically. And that's how I would make my money. But I learned so much. I learned sales skills, like radio skills, production skills, all this kind of stuff. So I don't regret it at all. But 3 years into it, I remember like really wanting a job. My parents were giving me a lot of pressure. I felt like a failure. And I remember waking up one day and they had given a producer job to one of my really good friends. We were like best friends. We had a radio show together and everything. And I texted him. I was like, hey, Drewski, I don't feel like going to work today. You know, I'm really bummed out. If you want to learn how to be the producer, learn it on your own. Because I was basically doing the job for free because like it was like an interim period. And I was like just pissed off, right? Mm-hmm. He showed the text to Angie because he was in trouble. He didn't know how to do his job and he needed me there. And he was like, Hala's not coming in to work today. Angie got really mad at me. We made up since then. And she fired me. She pulled the plug. She like told everybody nobody can talk to me. All the DJs who were my mentors, like 3 years of my life just taken away from me. And at that point, I was like devastated. And I was Hala from Hot 97. Everybody from college knew me, Hala from Hot 97. My Twitter handle was Hala Hot 97. And I had like grown a following. And I felt like my identity, to your point, your original question, right? My identity was stripped away from me because I had too closely tied who I was with the brand of Hot 97. And suddenly I cried like somebody died because I literally thought that I was going to spend everybody at Hot 97 spends their whole career there. Even to this day, almost everybody that worked there when I worked there still works there. And so I literally thought this was going to be my life. This was going to be my family. This is it. And she like shut that dream down for me, right? So at that point, I decided to start my blog. But then something else happened similarly where I was rejected. I did this blog for 3 years. We became super popular. Within 3 months, we were one of the most popular hip hop blog sites in the world. We were the sorority of hip hop and I was the president, right? And so we would host events.
Okay, wait, Hala. Okay. So things stop for you at Hot 97. Are you still working at night?
For selling showcase tickets and stuff?
Yeah.
All that died with Hot 97.
Okay.
It was
so
all
then
affiliated.
You start a blog and are you living off savings? Are you working? How are you getting money to survive?
Yeah, I had some money because I would do like marketing. I would like do marketing for like hip hop festivals. I was always doing like side hustle marketing and stuff like that to make money, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So that's how I had money. So I started this blog site and I went back to school. And basically I was like, no one's going to blackball me. I'm going to make it no matter what. I still had so much fire in me. And to be honest, like to be 19 and like I was dating Chris Brown at one point, like I was hanging out with like so many celebrities. And so like, I just like was so full of myself in a good way at that point. I had like a lot of belief in myself and that I could do anything, right? I was obsessed with the law of attraction and like, I thought I could do anything. So Hot 97 fired me, basically. I was devastated, but within like literally 4 days, I had this idea of starting something new to empower women in the hip hop industry that were being overlooked, like me. And I put out all these solicits on Twitter and Craigslist. And I was like, hey, if you're a pretty girl and you want to learn how to blog, like, you know, apply here and blah, blah, blah. I'll teach you how to blog and I'll teach you everything. And let's do this. Because I had been blogging on the side for the DJs at Hot 97, like DJ Enough and Funkmaster Flex, right? So I had learned all this stuff and I was like, let me
time out. One part.
Yeah.
When you're blogging, it's written word. So when you had said, if you're a cute girl, was it a visual and a written blog? How did that come into play?
I just was at the time, I wanted to have like this bad girl club, like let's do a hip hop blog site. And I actually wanted, like literally wanted pretty girls on my team. Not everybody was like drop dead gorgeous, but I wanted cute girls because part of it was hosting parties. We would host parties and that's how we would make money, our events. So we would host parties and concerts and it was like girls that like one girl worked at iHeart, one girl worked at Def Jam, one girl, you know, everybody worked at all these different like places. And I was the one that was like running the blog and building the website and teaching. I was like the nerd behind the scenes.
Okay.
I would like show up to the parties once in a while and like, and so on. So anyway, we were basically like semi-famous in the tri-state area. Everybody at Hot 97 ended up like making up with me. Me and Angie made up. And then the same DJs that didn't hire me back then started hosting me for all their parties. And then all of a sudden I would get like shouted out on the radio more than I did when I was actually like interning for them and working for them every day because they respected me more because I had did it on my own. And they were like, whoa, like Holla just did something on her own in 3 months and everybody's talking about it. Like, okay, like we've got to like talk to Holla again, right? So it worked. I got what I wanted. And MTV actually reached out to us 3 months into the blog because basically I figured out how to utilize Twitter in a really innovative way before anybody else was doing it. When we would put out a blog, I told everybody to at the celebrity name. And then I hooked up all the girls' profiles to Twitter where every time we posted a blog, like you'd have 50 pretty girls like tweeting Drake at once, right? So what would Drake do? Retweet one of us, right? So we went viral all the time and that's how we blew up right away. So MTV reached out to us and they were like, Holla, like let's do like a short pilot. So they came to one of our radio, we had a radio show as well in the sorority of hip hop. They came to our show and like, we'd like, you know, we're filming and it was like really nothing big. And nothing came out of it. But to me, it was like, well, what else is going to happen? Who cares, right? Then 2 years later, after like so much hard work, like barely surviving, imagine I had like 50 girls to feed. Like there was just like no money to go around. We were broke as a joke, right? And MTV was like, okay, like for real, we want to do this. And they filmed us all summer. They signed five of the girls. We were going to make like $5,000 an episode. And I thought I was rich. And like, I was like so excited. And 2 weeks before they were going to air, like I'm telling you, Jasmine, we did like a dance show. We had like a concert. Like we did everything. They filmed us in the street in restaurants at our family's house the whole summer. They got us a studio. I didn't even say this. They got us a studio on Broadway that was like all hooked up. And like, it was crazy. Like the real world is what I felt like, right? I felt like I was in the real world. And it was okay. Right after Jersey Shore. Okay. They pulled the plug after 2 weeks. They didn't even tell me why. It could have been because I was Arabic. It could have been like anything, right? So it's like, they pulled the plug. They didn't tell me why. And this like totally broke my heart. Then so suddenly like the spirit that I had, I was just broken. I was like, you know what? Like I've been basically working for free for 6 years, just like always trying to make it. And everybody always tells me no. Even during this whole experience, I almost got a co-host job with Sway in the Morning on SiriusXM. And basically after 2 weeks, they like let me go. And so it was like, I just got like rejected from radio, rejected from satellite radio, rejected from TV now. And I was like, okay, this is not for me. Like I better like make my parents proud, quit and go back to school, maybe get a regular job, be normal. And I did that. I shut everything down. The girls to this day, many of them really don't like me because I shut it down and they were very upset with me. I shut everything down and I went, got my MBA, got a 4.0 that gave me a leg in the door with corporate. And I entered the corporate world at like 27, 28, which is really late. And I thought I was going to like really suck at it and that it was going to be like a lot of trouble, but I ended up doing amazing in corporate. And I stayed at Hewlett Packard was my first job. I stayed there for like 4 years. And after 4 years, I never thought I was going to get back on a mic. I was doing very similar things at HP, like interviewing the CEO at the town halls. And like, I was still the same Holla, right? President of the Young Employee Network. I was still the same Holla, but just different. And then 4 years into it, I didn't get an opportunity that I wanted at HP and I was really disappointed. It was one of those, another situation where a gatekeeper told me no, I wanted to be the president of the Global Young Employee Network and I totally earned it. But they picked somebody with no experience. And again, I found myself in a situation and I was like, you know what? I'm never doing this again. I'm never going to work on something that's not my own. I need my own brand. I need my own thing. And I'm no longer going to put my free time into somebody else's brand. And so I decided that instead of leading, you know, at the time I wanted to lead 7,000 employees at HP, that maybe I'd lead 7 million young professionals. And I started Young and Profiting Podcast. So that's how I started the actual podcast. And that's the story of me kind of getting rejected and losing my identity and eventually finding myself with Yap.
And so it's at this time that you start the podcast, but you transition, if I understand the story correctly, you transition from HP to Disney at this time?
Exactly. Also, when I started the podcast, I was very upset with HP that I moved to Disney.
Got it. Okay. So if somebody were to be like above your lifeline, they're seeing that you have a skill set of being able to gather people around you to believe in something bigger. You have this really scrappy technical know-how of taking disparate pieces and putting them together. And then you have this embodiment and a skill set that you know how to be in front of people and talk to people. And so you're aggregating a bunch of lessons that then you say, I am starting a podcast and I'm at Disney. And this podcast is just to share lessons that I've learned. That is your ambition at the time.
Basically what happened is like, I finally was making like well over six figures. And I was basically somebody who had entrepreneurial experience who failed, who also ended up making it in the corporate world. And so I was like, you know, I can speak to both people and I still want to learn from people. I want to start a podcast. And at the time, you know, 6 years ago, now everybody has like a podcast, entrepreneurship podcast, right? But back then it was like really unique. And everyone's like, I can't believe you're doing this. Like, what are you even doing? And I just wanted to learn from other people and help other people because I knew how hard it was to make it.
Okay. So what I have seen this conversation take is like two paths and now they're intersecting because we started off with this version of you that we see and it's like, wow, it's so impressive. And somebody's looking at that, it must be easy. And then what happens is you start the path at a different point in the story to say anything but honey. And so now there's this intersection where you have this podcast and then you have this white glove agency where you're helping build and extend social brands. And then talk to me about what happens as the next pivot for what you're currently doing. And okay, and I just kind of want to take a second and bring the listeners and the viewers from my perspective. I have seen somebody iterate and then refuse to stay down. I have seen somebody take what they're currently doing and then being able to upsell, offer, continue to white glove this experience. And to enter into the white glove service world is one thing. And then to continue it over years is an entirely other thing. But then to continue it over years and then add other elements is really fascinating. So I really wanted to bring you on because it's like you're a very unique case study. And I want listeners to say like, whoa. Like she started off at 700, moved to 30 grand, continued to iterate. And that's kind of where I want to bring this story now with taking what you've been learning and then offering this new subset for podcasting.
Yes. So one thing to note is that my whole strategy with all of my businesses, even starting with my first client, Heather Monahan, is I do it for myself first. Really, really good. Ooh. I am my client.
Ooh.
I do it for myself. Really, really good. And once me and my team can do it for myself and we get results, we then figure out how we can standardize it and roll it out to our clients. And we do that with every single service, starting with LinkedIn, then it was Instagram, then it was podcast production, then it was media buying to grow podcasts, then it was sponsorships, which is why now I have my podcast network, right? So that's basically the evolution. I would do it for myself, then I would do it for like my core clients. And then if it made sense, I would like, you know, advertise it to the world, right? So that's basically how I've grown my agency. And then now I have a podcast network that's actually making more money now than my agency is. It's growing super fast. I've got a podcast network called the Yap Media Network. I've got the number one business and self-improvement podcast network. I've got Jenna Kutcher signed exclusively to me, Amy Porterfield, Julie Solomon, John Lee Dumas, Trent Shelton. And so we run all their podcast sponsorships and we host their podcasts and we help them get sponsorships across their podcast, social, YouTube, and so on.
Okay.
And
so for a listener who's unfamiliar with perhaps the genre of what we're speaking of and to, you have your agency that is an extension of LinkedIn social brand building. And then you have a separate agency that's built for podcasters where you will do production, sponsors, ad placements. Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, it's slightly different. So I have a social media and production agency. That's like one. Everything is all Yap Media. It's all my company. Everybody's in the same Slack channel. Like there's some cross teams, but everything's pretty much two businesses. I actually have three businesses. So there's
explain that because I find it fascinating here. Okay, so we have Yap Media as the social umbrella.
Yeah, Yap Media is the umbrella. Then I have my social agency. We're known as the number one LinkedIn marketing agency. We do LinkedIn, Instagram, podcast production, YouTube production, right? So it's all of like our monthly retainers, social and podcast services, simulcast services to actually produce and publish content, right? And create brands and all that kind of stuff. So that's one, that's a huge part of my team. Most of my talent makes up this team. I have like 40 people who work at my social agency, right? Wow. So that's the social agency. Then I have my podcast network. This is a newer business that I started about a year and a half ago. Essentially, I had grown three other podcasts to about my size, started selling out my shows, selling out their shows. And then I realized, hey, I could create a podcast network. I know how this works. I did it and I'm crushing because I'm the only podcast network with a full service social media agency that's focused on podcasts.
Interesting.
So it's like I can offer other services to my podcasters. So then my podcasters become my social client. Like, so Jenna Kutcher, for example, it's like I'm running her LinkedIn and I'm doing all her podcast sponsorships and it all works together, right?
Awesome.
So that's kind of how it works. My podcast network, we do sponsorships. So basically what that means is all the different commercials, like Jasmine, I'm sure you do podcast commercials where you're like reading a commercial. I will make you so much money like today. I will literally make you so much money. Let's talk.
Okay. And so that's the third arm of the business.
No, that's the second arm. The podcast network's the second arm of the business. The third arm is Yap Academy. So now I have courses. So for people, it's very expensive to work at our agency. It's minimum $10,000 a month. And that's just for LinkedIn, right?
Got it.
So my course is a way for people to learn about LinkedIn and eventually podcasting and do it for themselves much cheaper. And then I'm able to accomplish my dream, which is to help other people like level up, not just like, you know, the rich and famous.
This is fantastic. So we hear so much about, we see and hear so much about what you're doing professionally. And so when I hear and see another ambitious, amazing, brilliant, kind, smart woman do this, I sometimes ask myself a big esoteric question. And so maybe I'll toss it your way.
Okay.
When somebody's looking and seeing all of the things that you're doing, is there the elusive enough, like enough with a capital E? Like when on the outside, does somebody look at you and be like, okay, Hala said she's done enough, made enough, or does that exist for you?
I am really ambitious. Like I'm trying to grow this to like $100 million company and I like see the light. Like everything is just like downstream momentum right now. So for me, I want to impact as many people as possible. And that means I need to make as much money as possible, not for myself, but really so that I can make a big positive impact in the world. I want to help people, you know, make money, hire more people. Like when I think about like what is success to me, I always think about like a big team, right? That I'm like, everybody's making money. Everybody's elevating in their careers. And also like helping all my clients and helping all my students and just helping people live better lives. Now, I will say like I'm Palestinian, right? So there's like a lot of stuff going on in the world. And now I feel this new calling all of a sudden that I always said like, hey, I think I'm going to get involved in politics. I always had that in the back of my mind. Like, yeah, maybe when I'm older, I'll get involved in politics. Now, all of a sudden, everything is so clear that like I have to get involved in politics. And so like, I'm like just figuring out again, like new side hustle on the side. Like, what am I going to do to figure out how that I can start this path so that in 10 years, when I sell my company, I'm ready to do this next thing and live my life of service.
I had no idea whatsoever that that was the answer that I was going to
get. I never shared that before because it's all new information. It's like, I'm just like, I just feel like the world is so broken and I feel like so few people are willing to stand up. And I just feel like I don't have a choice. I've never even wanted to do it. I just feel like I literally don't have a choice. And I know that I'm good at this kind of stuff. I know I can mobilize people. I know that I could like, this might sound mean, but I saw Jill Stein's social media and she has 40,000 followers. And I was like, we were screwed. Like, I got to figure this out. Somebody's got to step up to the plate. So it's just like, I just feel like I have a lot of skills that would help me win, you know, I don't know, maybe become a congresswoman one day. I don't know. I never thought it was possible, but now I feel like I don't have a choice. So I feel like maybe I'll change my mind, but right now that's all I can think about is like, how do I just like figure out how to start this path at least?
Interesting. I'm excited because who knows? In 8 years, in 10 years, in 12 years, in 20 years, Hala, like you're going to have a documented clip to say that the side hustle started a decade because you didn't go after it. It came to you in the same way that you had side hustled a myriad of other things and then brought them to life. And it ended up being better than you had expected. I'm really happy that we get to document this at this time in 2024 to see you perhaps sitting in Congress, speaking your truth, mobilizing people.
There's a big lesson.
I don't even know where to go after that.
I have a big lesson that might help you because it ties everything together. When I first started my podcast, when everybody asked me where I would be in 5 years, I used to say, I'm going to have the biggest podcast network in the world. And I had no idea what I was talking about. I had no idea what that even meant. And then I took this path of like, you know, my audience told me they wanted a social agency. So I made a social agency and I did all this stuff essentially. And then after 5 years, I ended up with a podcast network and I basically didn't even try to make it. I just ended up being like, whoa, I have a podcast network. And then suddenly, you know, 5 years later, it's like exactly what I said it was going to be. It's like I put that seed in the air and I just did the hard work and I just followed my gut and I just followed the yeses and I just followed, you know, what I thought was the right thing to do at each and every moment. And, you know, I ended up with what I had basically manifested years before. So this is very like this now, what we're talking about of me saying I want to get to politics, I think it's going to be very similar. I think it's going to be me slowly like figuring it out and just naturally figuring it out until I get to that point. And again, it's like, you've got to just follow the signs. I never thought it was going to be this soon. I really never did. But I'm like, okay, this is already happening. I just did a fundraiser. I raised $50,000 like this. I got like 1,000 emails of people who are aligned to this cause. And I'm like, okay, like this, I guess this is the start, you know, and just going to go for it.
So, you know, when we hear this and you lay it out that way, I honor it. But one thing that I don't think was mentioned as significantly as it was that you didn't stay down. Mm-hmm. Like you chose to get back up because mm-hmm. what happens is like the narrative on the outside is like, she's persistent and she manifests it. Right. But none of that exists without the ability to continue to rise up after we've been knocked down. And so that's been very clear in your story. And I just wanted to take a second to highlight that and also honor that. And so, you know, as people, obviously, I know we're probably going to give a plug to your LinkedIn, but there's a group of people who are like, I want to know more. I want to see what she's doing. I want to get into her head and see how she works. Where do you tell people to go to like really get to know you?
Yeah. So first off, I would love for you guys to follow me on LinkedIn. I give a lot of, you know, I'm one of the biggest influencers on that platform. And so I give a lot of personal insight. I'm posting every day. It's me really posting, right? So I'd love for you guys to follow me on LinkedIn. Young and Profiting is my podcast. I put my heart and soul in it. I've interviewed amazing people from Matthew McConaughey to Damon John to Seth Godin, you name it.
To Jasmine Starr.
Yeah. And of course, if you guys want to learn about LinkedIn, I have the number one LinkedIn course. It's a 2-day workshop that I do about every other month. If you guys want to learn more about it, I'll give you a discount with Jasmine's name for 35% off. And you can go to yapmedia.io/course. And we've got a bunch of sessions coming up.
That's amazing. Let's go, Hala. I want to take a second, knowing how busy you are and how much you're trying to change the world. The fact that you would take time to generously share your experience to connect disparate dots. You are a person who does that so brilliantly and you share the behind the scenes and you become a symbol and a sign of what it means to have the odds stacked against you and continue moving forward. So it's been an honor watching your journey. And I think it's been so much of an honor for you to share the journey and your story here. So thank you 100,000 times over. For those of you who are listening and watching, thank you for being here, being a part of the story, and sharing what you have learned. Thanks again for watching and listening to the Jasmine Starr Show.